You're going to love the next guest. His name is Officer Dion Joseph. He's a 24-year veteran, 22 of those years working in downtown Los Angeles Skid Row community. From patrolling the streets or providing a shoulder for the community to lean on to meeting with public figures and advocating for change, Officer Dion Joseph is driven to create an environment conducive to change for the homeless and those trying to reclaim their lives from the grip of addiction. Next on the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here. Special thanks to all those brave men and women out there working in the criminal justice community. Thank you for doing what you are doing in a very difficult environment. Keep up the fantastic work. Want to give a shout out to our partner, Detecticam. Mobile threat detection is here, folks, in the palm of your hand. Head over to cjevolution.com and see what Detecticam can do for your organization. Folks, we continue to grow because of you, the listener and supporter. If you would rate and review the show on iTunes, give us those five-star ratings. We sure would appreciate it. Now on to the show. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have my friend, Officer Dion Joseph, on the show. Dion, you there, sir?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Well, welcome back, man. I appreciate it. I know you were on a couple months before. We had some audio problems, and I'm glad you made time to come back, Dion. For those of listeners who don't know who you are, sir, can you talk a little bit about yourself? Even though I know you're a humble guy and you want to talk about other things, but it's important to talk about you for just a moment.
Okay. Well, I've been a police officer for 24 years, 21 of those years working in a place called Skid Row, which is in the heart of Los Angeles area, and been working there as a lead officer for about 14 years, trying to create an environment conducive to change so that the influence of the multiple service providers there can be stronger than that of the criminal element that is preying on them. In my mind, that's one of the number one issues that people don't talk about. It's the issue everybody sweeps under the rug as it relates to why the homeless can't change. And one of their number one issues is crime, and we can't ignore it anymore. It's a reality.
Well, we have to quit putting all the homeless in jail. I mean, I guess there's a time and a place for that, but it's just a revolving door, right? There's got to be other options out there.
For me, it's not about putting the homeless in jail. Look, we already know, and it's a cliche, but it's true. We can't arrest our way out of the situation. Look, it's not really called crime stop. You can never really completely stop crime. It's called crime control. So law enforcement officers across this nation use laws to control crime. Basically, sometimes you have to stop the little things to keep the big things from happening. But I think enforcement can play a key role in reducing crime and helping people if you infuse enforcement and outreach together, like an initiative that my agency was engaged in years ago, where it was a three-pronged approach where it was enforcement, where we enforce the law and make sure there's zero tolerance for crime. But at the same time, we created an environment, working with city families to trim trees, keep the sidewalks clear, safe, use condoms, needles up, street lights everywhere. And then lastly, most importantly, outreach, which was infused. And this is what it looked like. If we brought somebody in and we knew that alcohol addiction, drug addiction, mental health, or chronic homelessness was driving them to commit certain low-level crimes, we would offer them an alternative to jail. So if they completed a 21-day program that suited their need, we dropped the charges. I thought that was a beautiful thing. Now, I remember one year about 2,225 individuals signed up for the program. Now, of course, most of them signed it so they can go back out and destroy themselves. A warrant went out for their arrest, and we would pick them up again and try it again. But I would estimate, in my mind, about 30% of those individuals actually took us up in the programs, and we saw an increase in people utilizing the services from our push. Before, some of the shelters were reporting that they only had a 40% participation rate in their support programs for alcohol and drug addiction. It then jumped to 65%. And the other thing we were finding out was that a lot of these folks weren't actually homeless. They were just down here for the party because this is a place where everybody said you can go and smoke dope, do what you want to. There's low consequences, and all I have to do is say I'm a drug addict and I get slapped on the wrist. So we were finding them in places like Carson, Watts, Long Beach, Carson, South L.A., when they had warrants for their arrest, with their parents, with their mom, with their sister, with their wives. And, you know, that was another interesting thing. So it worked. So crime control works. Once again, it's never going to be crime stop. As long as human beings live on this planet, somebody's going to do wrong. That's just human nature. It's just what it is, you know. But it's crime control. And crime control is necessary, even for the homeless. And I'll say this, and I'll be rambling. Look, no one can be above the law. okay? When rich people are above the law, what do we have? We have stock market crashes, we have Enron, we have people losing their life savings. But when extremely poor people are above the law, guess what we have? We have Skid Row, and it starts to metastasize. And that's what we're seeing in Southern California. We're seeing many Skid Rows growing. And I said, as the real Skid Row goes, I said this in 2007, so will the rest of the state. And I was right. And I hate being right. I wish I could be wrong sometimes.
Well, it's not just in California, Dion. You know that. It's in other states, too. Right. You know, and yeah.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. Yeah. People are taking a more relaxed stance on crime, and it's only emboldening the criminal element. And the thing about homelessness is it's not a crime to be homeless, but no one can ignore that there is a criminal fallout that comes with being homeless, because what I found in the area I police, that the majority of the people that are in the streets, that are actually sleeping on the street, aren't there because they lost their housing or because of the rise of rent. Okay. I always ask people, I'll ask you, if you lost your apartment or home today, would your first inclination be to go set up a cardboard condo or a tent in one of the worst, most dangerous places in the United States of America? What would you do? You'd either go find a family member, you'd sleep in the car, or you'd beat down the door of a shelter, let me in, so I'm not out here dealing with this madness. Because the madness is real. In Skid Row, most of the people who are anchored to the streets are there because of addiction. And when they're addicted, I always tell people, you can't separate poor quality of life and narcotics addiction from violence. It all goes hand in hand. And we have people who are trying to push this narrative that drug addiction is a nonviolent crime. And that is one of the, it is a nonviolent issue. So we shouldn't pay attention to it. And that's one of the biggest lies ever told. These folks, you know, yes, they need help, but they also need accountability. They need an environment conducive to change. And they need mandatory programs. And now what they're doing now is saying, oh, no, go to a program on your own. And most of these folks can't do that. It's impossible.
Yeah. Well, let's shift gears a little bit, Dion, talk about you. What I always ask Leos that are on the show, what made you become a cop? What was the catalyst?
For me, I hated police officers growing up. Being a young African-American male, like many, I was indoctrinated to hate, fear, and loathe law enforcement. Also, a couple of incidents of racial profiling didn't help that much. You had the Rodney King incident playing over and over every night. I mean, the media was having a ratings field day with it, and me being young and impressionable, I was like, oh, wow, the police are horrible. You know, so that started to shape me. Then I ended up losing my job. I was out of work for about 3 months. I had met my beautiful, beautiful wife, and I wanted to take care of her. Call me chauvinistic if you want to. I'm old school. I was out of work, and I broke up with her 3 times, and she wouldn't leave me, thank God. and someone told me, hey, Dion, you're out of work, you're broke, you lost your apartment, put your name in the police department. I said, the police department? Get out of here, man. I tried sanitation. I tried the fire department. I tried everything but the police department. So I put my name in the hat with the police department, and guess who was the only one they called? The police department. And I was like, are you kidding me, Lord? You know, so not the Rodney King, not all this stuff. I was like, oh, okay. But I did it anyway. And what I did was, once I stepped across that line, I discovered that 90% of what my friends and family members who in love were trying to basically lovingly warn me about police, one of the things they kept telling me was, don't let those white boys change you, you know? And I was like, oh, okay. So once I stepped across the line, I discovered 90% of the things that was said about law enforcement officers was 100% false. I found that most of my counterparts in the academy and beyond, whether they're white, black, Hispanic, the vast majority were the honorable rule, not the negative exception. And then I ended up in the streets policing with white officers, black officers. And once again, you know, I always tell people in law enforcement officers, here's what you got to understand about police officers. Police officers are a microcosm of society. Okay. That means we all can agree that in the United States of America, just 320 million people, the vast majority of them, whether they're white, black, gay, straight, Hispanic, Muslim, Jew, Christian, atheist, bisexual, transgender, they're all decent people just trying to live their lives. I think we all can agree with that. Mm-hmm. We can also agree that in the United States of America, there's a negative exception, and it's a small percentage that's doing a lot of dirt, causing all the media clickbait, ending up on the 6 o'clock news, making it seem like the world is a rolling dumpster fire in a forest, right? In a dry forest.
Yeah.
These are true statements.
Yeah.
Where do law enforcement agencies select their people from? The American public. And once again, it's going to match the public. They're going to select mostly people who really want to, who care, who really want to get out there and protect and serve and put their lives on the line, put it all on the line for the communities they serve. But yes, every now and then, the negative exception is going to get on. And when they rear their ugly head, they're the ones who's going to get all the clickbait. They're the ones whose videos are going to be put in the montage to make it seem like we're all murderous brutes who are oppressors and slave catchers and stuff like that. And it's really damaging. It's really damaging because it gives our detractors the red meat they need when one of them has that human moment, knowing that we're all human. One of the things they do is a tactic that what we're up against as law enforcement is a tactic being committed against us that actually Adolf Hitler used. Adolf Hitler, we all can agree, was the most evil man in the 20th century. Anybody who disagrees with me, you know, let's talk and put some gloves on. Let's duke it out, right? But, you know, so this is not giving him a compliment, but he was extremely in tune to human nature. What Adolf Hitler understood was that you can bring people together for a cause faster with hate than you can do with love. And if you want to know how difficult bringing people together with love is, ask Dr. Martin Luther King. You can't. He's dead. Someone shot him, right, while he was on the balcony, right? So what Hitler did was he said this: tell a lie, keep it simple, and repeat it over and over and over again until everybody believes it. That's what Adolf Hitler said. One of his lackeys said, tell a lie once, no one's going to believe you. You tell that lie 1,000 times, everybody's going to believe you. So what was the lie told about the Jews back then? That Jews were inferior, Germans were superior, the Jews were trying to take your jobs, you know, they're trying to rape us, all kind of stuff like that, okay? Which gathered Germans in a frenzy who felt disenfranchised, and they went out and murdered 6 million Jews and 4 million others, okay? What was the lie told about black men in the Jim Crow South? Oh, guess what? Now that they're free, they're going to try to rape your women, you know, impregnate your daughters. We need to go ahead and stop this so we can keep our white race pure. And everybody said it over and over again. Hate unified more people, and thousands of black people were lynched and murdered. What was said about black people in the 80s and 90s, young black males, that we were all drug dealers, all criminals, which caused me to get into an elevator and some little white lady clutching her purse and profiled, racially profiled twice because of a negative exception of my community. And this, I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
That was so much damage that it also helped fuel that disturbing narrative, which is unfortunate, which doesn't make it right. But yeah, that helped fuel it too. Now, what's the narrative told about police officers? Obviously, it's all cops are racist. All cops hate minorities. And of course, they get the videos and they carefully select certain videos to push that narrative. And unfortunately, we live in a microwave society or in a society of headline thinkers. You know, critical thinking is gone. It's completely gone. I call it a microwave society because, you know, look at life like a microwave. You know, you're hungry, you want a meal, and instead of taking the time to cook it nice and slow, make sure it's healthy, you said, forget that. I'm going to throw this bad boy in the microwave, put it on for 2 minutes and eat it, okay? It tastes good, but it burns the roof of your tongue, might give you cancer, and you burned all the nutrients out of it, right? But it doesn't matter. You're fed, you're happy, right? Instead of taking the time to cook it and get all the nutrients out. We're headline thinkers. It's what the headline says, okay? The headline's going to read in the next cop shooting, police department murders 32-year-old black baby, and we show a picture of him playing t-ball.
Yeah.
And that's all they put out there in the headline. And nobody really cares about the fine print where it says somewhere that he had an AK-47, you know? And that's what we're up against. And even the bigger monster is not even the regular media now, which are looking for sponsors and ratings. Right now, it's social media.
Sure.
We cannot beat social media. And I always tell people, I don't think we're going to solve this thing on a macro level as far as how police departments are viewed. But I think on a micro level, in your particular agency, if you adopt certain principles to become like family to the community that you serve, I think slowly but surely, you know, your community's members will start to say, well, I know maybe that agency over there is like that, but I know Officer so-and-so is not like that. And that's why I exist, to try to talk to law enforcement officers about how to build those bridges and just tell my experiences about showing love to marginalized communities who feel left out, who hate you, from a place that they don't expect it. I think that's literally the answer to solving the problem, micro level.
And I got to ask you something, Dion. As a, and thank you for your service, sir. As an African American police officer in the United States, what do you? Because you hit it right on the head. I mean, officers are painted as racist, but as a African-American cop, how do you respond to that? You're an African-American cop. Are you racist too? I mean, how does that work? I mean, forgive me. I'm a white guy. I'm a white officer, and I have no idea. But I wanted to ask you that because that means you're a racist too, right? That means Hispanic officers are racist. That means Asian officers are racist. And I just don't get it. I mean, are there racist cops out there? Absolutely. We need to get rid of them.
Yeah.
But how do you answer that? I mean, because you get that too.
Yeah, it's that was tough for me. You know, sometimes I would get it worse than my white counterparts because I was viewed as a traitor. Yeah, I had a whole bunch of names, Uncle Tom, House Negro, and a whole host of other things that I don't want to say.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really a struggle in my earlier years, you know, with my own identity as a black man. But I was raised as a, you know, a Christian before that, you know, so I was always taught to see people and love all people. So I was able to fight through that. It's an extreme challenge, you know, being called the beast at every feast, and you want help. I joined the department to try to be the change I wanted to see, you know, and it's frustrating because one of the number one complaints of many of these advocacy groups, I mean, I've been on interviews where they say, hey, well, you guys need to hire more African-Americans and then things will get better. And I was like, hey, I agree. The problem is you vilify or engage in demagoguery against law enforcement agencies so strong, you don't want to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, who wants to do it and say, you know, hey, you know, and have your own mom look at you like the enemy, or have your cousins, you know, look at you funny at the family barbecue or cookout, you know? It's a tough thing. So it's counterintuitive, this narrative that now, of course, there's, like I said, are there racists on the job? There are racists in every profession.
Sure.
As long as human beings wear a badge. As a matter of fact, I'll preface it with this. Look, racism, apathy, bigotry, cynicism, brutality, these are not law enforcement traits. They're human traits. And as long as human beings wear a badge, wear doctor coats, hell, if they're in the White House, you know, over the last 16 years, it's been a They're in government. As long as human beings run anything, there's always somebody that's going to do something to disappoint or and rear their ugly head and hurt us all. We have to get beyond the actions of one painting all, and we have to start focusing on that one. We can't change policy, good, sound policy, because of the action of somebody who broke that policy. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Well, they're saying, well, if that guy did it, that means your policy's not working. No, that's just he went out of policy or she went out of policy. Instead, now they're making policy based on the extreme. And it's going to put officers in danger as well as civilians in danger. It's going to cause officers. It's already causing officers to second guess themselves in places like Chicago, Baltimore, where they truly, truly need the police in their community. Like some of them are now begging for it. Officers are still gun shy about going there and doing their job because they know they're not going to be supported. Mm-hmm. And, because now sorry to say this, the truth is the advocates run the asylum now. And that's a dangerous place to be when people with no police experience, no understanding of the reality and how quick things happen out there are now running the show instead of responsible leadership.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, as well as I do, Dion, I mean, when I became a cop over two decades ago, and I'm assuming with you too, people were flocking to law enforcement jobs. It's not happening that way anymore, at least in Colorado.
No, it's an unattractive job now. Our detractors did their job. They did the Hitler move, and now nobody wants to protect and serve. But at the same time, they need us, you know. But what's going to happen is you're going to have that slow attrition where people are going to retire out and no one's joining. And then in about 10 years, you're going to need the police, and you're going to wonder what the heck happened, you know, what the heck happened. And it's going to happen. I mean, we've been here before. I mean, it's cyclical.
Yeah.
Okay. Cyclical. Every 2015, what a year or so, we see a battle between the due process and crime control advocates, right? Mm-hmm. Now, me, I'm not anti either one. I believe that both serve a purpose. I believe that due process surveyed a purpose to prevent tyranny, and crime control advocates or that ideology serves a purpose to maintain order, to not hamper civil rights, but to bolster civil rights for the greater good of all. That's how I see it. And when one side or the other gets too much control, absolutely bad things could happen either way. And we've seen that. What I don't like seeing right now is the extremes of both ideologies. There's mm-hmm. extremes. Everything is extremes now. And now the extreme folks have the reins. And now it's in a due process people's court. They have the ball right now, and they're running with it, and they're not giving it back, and they're trying to break the system so it can't be fixed, because they have a worldview, that they have an ideology that they want to promote that's more important than protecting people. And that's we're actually living in a very scary time, yeah. And it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, and I well said. I couldn't agree with you more. What other challenges do you think, Dion, are out there for law enforcement come up? You've already, relationships with the community are huge, and thank God we got people like you out in the community kind of trying to break that perception of law enforcement. What other, and attrition and turnover rates in law enforcement and getting those ranks replenished, any other challenges you see, you know, in the future with law enforcement?
Well, another huge challenge that I know that I'm dealing with, and I'm sure other agencies are struggling as I'm reading the news and watching mainstream media, is mental illness. Mm-hmm. In the streets, right now I was in Hollywood with my family after my book signing event, where it just looked like someone just let loose the asylum and got running in the street, pooping in the street. This is Hollywood. This is not even Skid Row.
Yeah,
you know. So mental illness is a huge challenge. I think if we can lick that to a degree, I think about maybe a third of the issues we're facing could be helped. America's solution right now to mental illness is to, as we know, close down the asylums in the 70s. And then that was the extreme right side that did that. And then you have the extreme left side who came along and sued so they could never be opened up again. So they're mm-hmm. both equally responsible. So don't come at me saying Reagan this. Well, the ACLU had a hand in it too.
Yeah.
Okay. So the solution is now sprinkle pills on them in the name of civil liberties, boop, kick them out in the street. Many of them fell into the loving arms of family who tried to help them and manage them. But you had a lot of them who ended up in places like Skid Row because they were shoved down there because in the 1980s, Mayor Bradley said, hey, come one, come all, we got services, bring them. And as they got to Skid Row, this is what happens to them. They have their prescribed medication, right? And they don't like their prescribed medication because it makes them down. It makes them feel lethargic. And nobody wants to feel like that. And plus, places like Skid Row are what they call lit or turned up. Like everything's hype over there, you know. So they sell their prescribed medication to make money to do what? Buy the hard stuff from the criminal element there, which are multiple gang members who descend upon Skid Row, and give them crack cocaine, meth, heroin, and even marijuana. And what's even the beef right now is spice. It's called a K2. That stuff is a monster right now.
Now, what is that? What is that, Dion?
Synthetic marijuana. It's sold. It used to be sold in weed shops. Just potpourri. And then finally, they scheduled that and made that illegal. But now they're just getting it out of flower shops. And what they do is they take it and they spray chemicals on it, Raid, formaldehyde, whatever, for a different effect. And it's driving people. If you weren't mentally ill before taking it,
damn,
you after taking it.
Wow.
And we actually have people crawling in the streets like tarantulas in front of city buses. It's really a nightmare. Huh. But anyway, so here's what happens. We know as law enforcement officers, and see, this is a thing. See, nobody's talking to us anymore. They're just assuming what we think about mental illness. We know mental illness is not a crime. We know that. Okay, being bipolar is not a crime, being paranoid schizophrenic is not a crime, or none of those things, right? But when those things meet crack and all those other drugs I was telling you about, it exacerbates their condition 100-fold to where even the most heavily trained mental health professional can't reach them. What do you do when there's a chemical buffer between you and the crisis, you know? Because how do I help someone who thinks I'm a 6-foot black widow spider with a Santa Claus hat on and a badge, you know? you got to get them in, and you have to detain them for their safety. And sometimes that could result into a use of force, but that's not because of a lack of training or a lack of compassion. It's just that chemical buffer, and society doesn't understand it. And this is how the system is broken. What they left us with is a 72-hour hold, which is completely flaccid. Mm-hmm. Okay. 72-hour hold looks like this. You're a danger to yourself, you're a danger to others, or you're gravely disabled, which means you can't, your mental capacity or your physical capacity, you're not able to take care of yourself. We can force you into help. So we have many people like that. We find these people, they qualify, we send them to the hospital. They're supposed to be there for 72 hours, which is already in itself impotent. They get released in 3 to 6 hours. Mm-hmm. They sprinkle pills on them. How you feeling? Get out of here, right? Here's the problem with that. You haven't even dealt with the entire issue, because now many of them have self-medicated on the harder stuff, literally, and many of them haven't taken their prescribed medication for months. So literally, it takes about 6 to 8 weeks for someone taking their prescribed medication to stabilize if they're being monitored and they're being managed, right? So I think the law should change to, instead of 72 hours, 6 to 8 weeks or 6 weeks, so we don't freak out the civil liberties groups who think we're trying to put people in voluntary care. 6 to 8 weeks, why? Because the first week you got to detox them, right? Okay, because they're on drugs, okay? And then once you detox them, you put them on their medication, get them stabilized, you're developing a rapport with them. Then you're trying to contact their family members to see if they can get conservatives. And at the state level or the government level, let's change the definition of mental illness or broaden the definition of gravely disabled. You know, the definition is too skewed to where it allows people to slip through the cracks. I'm sorry, a guy walking down the street with a newspaper around his waist for a pair of underwear singing Jesus Loves Me is not, to me, that's gravely disabled.
You know? Can't take care of each other or himself.
But they're saying because he can eat a hamburger and because he, you know, knows to go to the bathroom every now and then, he's fine. And that's the problem we're having with the system. The system, systemic failures force us as law enforcement to be the tip of the spear. And when we're the tip of the spear, we get the brunt of the blame. And I'm here. I have to speak out on this. And that's why I wrote this book called Stepping Across the Line. I want to let people know from a cop's eye view what I see in the homeless community, what's really anchoring them, many of the population to the streets. And if you see that, maybe we can respond later via a truth through a truth-based foundation, not an idealistic one. Because right now, these current policies are failing. I don't care how much money you throw at the situation. It's failing.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the traditional thing is we throw money at it and make it go away, or we try to make it go away, and it's just not sustainable anymore. We have to come up with alternatives, which you have. Now, Dion, what advice would you give, kind of switching gears again, what advice would you give for new officers coming in the field, you know, people who are, you know, considering a career in this noble profession?
Well, you know, I'm not going to candy coat it. You know, it's tough. Right now it's tough, but we still need you. If you have a heart to serve, if you have a heart to make things better, if you want to be the change you want to see, stop talking about it and be about it. My father once told me, Dion, if you ever see a problem and you don't do anything about it,
you're part of the problem.
he said it's an excuse. If you think you can do it better than me, I welcome you. I will partner with you. And it's not going to be a competition thing with me. I'm going to give you my absolute best to make you the best officer, and my fellow officers will do the same. And then when you get out there, you can go and police in your way with your style, and we welcome you. It's needed. It's a noble profession, and I can't tell you how satisfying. Let me tell you what I was able to do as a police officer. I just want to let you know, because if you're thinking just law enforcement is carrying handcuffs and walking around swinging a baton, you're crazy, okay? Over the last 10 years, I was able to house 150 people. In transitional housing, permanent housing, and emergency housing, right? I was able to provide hygiene kits to the homeless to guide them to drug programs and shelter programs. I started a program called Ladies Night to educate women who are homeless and undocumented and let them know that I don't care if you're undocumented in from prison, on the pole, on the pipe, on parole, you have a fundamental right to report sex crimes and domestic abuse. And it was a beautiful thing. Because 175 women, homeless women, came to the First Ladies Night. And that's crazy because I was able to, and the department I worked for, which was great, able to build those bridges with the women where they could trust me to hear that message. And we, from that meeting, we actually ended up catching a serial rapist who raped three of the victims who were at that meeting. Mentor programs for kids. There are things you can do once you learn your job. You know, in many larger departments, there's maybe 250 different things you can do. But come down here, get some time under your belt, and be a part of the solution. Police work is what you make it. My uncle told me, said, Dion, if you become corrupt, it's because you allowed yourself to.
Yeah.
If you become a brute, it's because you allowed yourself to. See, everything in my family was about self-accountability. Everything about, you know, we were taught never to make excuses for our failures. So just come on the job and we'll partner with you and we'll show you what it's all about. There's some wonderful human beings out there who will show you the ropes, but it's a wonderful job. I've never had anything more satisfying in my life The only thing stressing me out is our is leadership way, way above our head in government. Helping people. I still love rescuing people. I still love helping people. But that's the only thing. But we still need you.
Yeah. And the only thing I would add to that, Dion, is new officers that are coming on, you need to align yourself with the positive role models like you and the positive law enforcement officers, because you know as well as I do, there's a segment of officers out there that are just kind of cynical and they're naive and they're just living that. You know, they're just very toxic, man. And we don't, I know everybody has a bad day, but I think one of the most important roles, and let me know what you think, in an agency is the FTO and the trainers, because those have so many influences over the new officers. And I just think it's so important that.
I discussed this in this book when I became a training officer.
Yeah.
I learned what not to do from a couple of training officers. There were some that were incredible who showed me the way, right way to do things. And there were some who I looked at and said, I don't want to be like you. And then some who actually mistreated me, you know, when I was one. So let me say some and everybody freaks out. One mistreated me and humiliated me. And it took another training officer to come and say, no, stop that, dude. I'm going to give him to somebody else. And the next training officer I had inspired me and prepared me. So, yeah, you know. There are good role models on this. Most, like I said, most officers are decent, good people. There is some cynicism. There is some apathy, but that only comes from when officers aren't supported.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When when I first got to my division, they said, oh, Dion, when you get there, the officers are going to be fat and lazy. That's not true. The officers weren't fat and lazy. They weren't supported by the system that sent them out there.
Yeah.
That's the only issue. But outside of that, it is a very rewarding job. It really is.
Well said, sir. Now, if people want to reach out to you, Dion, how can they find you, sir? How can they find your book?
Well, you can go to my website at www.dionjoseph.org. My book, Stepping Across the Line, Volume 1. It's a 2-volume book about my career. Volume 1, it shows my growth from a young African-American male who didn't like police but was bred to help people, who ends up being a cop and learning from really great officers and even some of the bad ones, some of the negative exception. And then even learning from community members and shaping me into becoming the officer I became in Volume 2, where I did some incredible things working with other officers to reduce crime, help the homeless. You can get that on my website at the store, www.dionjoseph.org. And it's a great book. It's a great novel. Look, I'm no Hemingway or Toni Morris. Look at the content and see yourself in me. And I'm telling the truth here. There's no lies in here. It's honest. It's transparent. And you might end up falling in love with police work and be inspired by my story. And if you are a police agency and you're looking for someone to lecture and talk to people in your community to try to recruit them, fly me out. Go to my website, fly me out, and I will talk to the people in your community about community policing and another side of police work they're not being shown to maybe inspire them to want to be police officers. Because some people just need to see a living, breathing version of what successful community policing and building. Because I've mastered I've simplified a complex adaptive system. And how I did that was I was able to figuratively take my uniform off. Mm-hmm. And be human and draw people in. And I want to show people how to do that.
Well, Dion Joseph, thank you so much, sir, for taking the time to come on the show. All that will be linked up in the show notes, brother. Once again, thank you for what you are doing in the community and, most importantly, your service as a police officer, sir.
And thank you for having me, brother. God bless you. Be safe out there. All you law enforcement agencies, I love you. Be safe. And, man, God bless you guys.
All right, brother. You take care of yourself.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.